We got a little quick lesson in pollinators. We seem to learn about pollinators by leaps and bounds, often the hard way. The insects and other animals that pollinate plants certainly came to the forefront about a year ago when a pesticide application at a shopping center near Portland killed thousands of bees. Bees are not the only pollinators, but they're certainly the best known. We can get to know them even better this week. June 16th through 22nd is National Pollinators Week, a time to observe and maybe even assist the work of pollinators. We have two guests with us from the Oregon Department of Forestry, Cynthia Orlando. Welcome, Cynthia. There.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can. Mike Kroon, are you there?
Good morning, Jeff. I am here, yes.
Okay. This is what happens when people sneak into our room when we're not here and push some of the buttons on us. So we're good now. All right. For either one of you, how long has there been a National Pollinator Week?
Oh, I believe it's the seventh year. I guess the U.S. Senate was designated this as National Pollinator Week, the 16th through the 22nd, and was designated by both the Department of Interior and Department of Agriculture. So I work with the Oregon Department of Forestry's Urban and Community Forestry Program, and with the popularity of gardening and landscaping in Oregon, I thought National Pollinator Week might be a good chance to get the word out about plants and flowers and tree choices and such that are helpful for pollinators.
I do remember a previous discussion we had with you about urban forestry, Cynthia. In that urban forestry area, in fact, for anybody, anywhere, I mean, what pollinates besides bees? Are bees the only pollinators, or do we have many more realms of creatures out there that do this work?
Well, there's also butterflies, birds, bats, even beetles. There's a lot of creepy crawlies that pollinate things that are in that category.
And it seems like every animal in the English language that starts with a B is involved in the process. And Mike, what's the usual assumption about how important pollinators are?
I'm sorry, say that again, Jeff?
What's the usual assumption about how important pollinators are to us?
The assumption is that they're very important to keep around and pollinate our crops and everything. It's a very, very big deal to keep them around, yes.
All right, so how do we observe this week?
Well, one way is for folks that are out there gardening and landscaping and so on. The selection of native plants is often very helpful. Native plants have a lot of advantages over non-natives, and one of the primary ones is how helpful they are for pollinators. They also tend to be sometimes a little more lower maintenance.
And what are some of the examples?
For flowers, goldenrod is a good one. That's a nice one. It's a full sun plant. Showy milkweed is the larval food plant for monarch butterflies. And that can be sown outside by seed, or it's also fairly readily available from native plant nurseries. It's kind of an interesting looking plant. If you saw it at a glance, you might think it's just an ordinary weed. It's fairly tall. It has opposite leaves, gray leaves, and orange or yellow flower clusters. That's an important one for the monarch. Another one I really like a lot is the snowberry. It's a very good plant for both urban settings and rural. That one will attract a lot of bees to it all year round.
All right, so I imagine there are some people who are feeling a certain level of reluctance here, Cynthia, because they're thinking, well, great, I want to make sure I do nice things for pollinators, but I don't particularly want bees around me, particularly people who are allergic to bee stings. So, can we give them some reassurances about how many bees are going to show up per plant or something?
Well, if I had somebody in my family who was allergic, I probably wouldn't go out of my way to put a lot of plants out there that were attracting to bees personally. Snowberry is a good one. It's low maintenance. It grows fairly quickly. It's fairly attractive. It has small little pink flowers on it. In the summertime, you'll see a lot of bees come around to it.
Milkweed you mentioned already. And there have been some issues, I understand, with milkweed where people do make the assumption that I think you said they do, which is they look at it as just an ordinary weed. But is it the only food supply for the monarch butterfly?
I'm not a butterfly specialist. Mm-hmm. I'm more of an urban forester type of person, but it does attract the monarch, and it is the main food source for it. I think it might be the only food source for it. The other thing I know about it is that a lot of times people will put it in their yard, and then, much to their dismay, it gets eaten by the butterflies, which is the purpose. So they're a little disappointed because there goes their plant. But That's why you're putting it out there, basically.
We're talking to Cynthia Orlando and Mike Kroon at the Oregon Department of Forestry about National Pollinator Week, where we celebrate the work of pollinators and maybe make their lives a little easier around the world. And we're talking about how, by putting certain plants out that will attract pollinators and help them do their work. Join us on the exchange with your questions and comments at 800-838-3760 around the region in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Is this really a case of an every little bit helps thing, where even if you have a small yard, just a few plants that might attract a pollinator would do a world of good, if everybody did this, in fact?
Oh, I believe so. And even if you have a deck, you know, you can always put potted plants out that are helpful. A good rule of thumb is a lot of the flowers, for butterflies, a lot of the flowers that are the flat ones, like a daisy, that look more like a daisy, that kind of a flower structure, those are very appealing and helpful for the butterflies. There are plants that are helpful both in the rural and urban setting, and Mike works with forest landowners in the state that have forested property. Checker mallow is a good one that's fairly hardy and very attractive. It looks kind of like a wild hollyhock, white to rosy pink flowers, and attractive to both bees and butterflies. And then there's native grasses also that are good as well. The fescues are a good choice, and for skippers, they're called. They look like little moths.
Mm-hmm. Well, so all kinds of choices out there, and a lot of them, for what you're saying, Cynthia, it doesn't sound like they really take a lot of work.
No, they don't. And, you know, some of them are fairly low maintenance. Red flowering currant is a magnet for hummingbirds, and that one's very easy to grow and very, very attractive. It's one of the early flowering plants in the springtime, so it's very nice that way.
All right, let's take a call here. We have Mark in Redding, California on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about National Pollinator Week with Cynthia Orlando and Mike Kroon at the Oregon Department of Forestry. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Do you have any knowledge of or information about the robo-bee research being done at Harvard University, paid for apparently by DARPA and Monsanto Corporation?
So this is something like a mechanical pollinator?
Apparently, yes. They figure Monsanto can do in the bees and we won't need them because we'll have the robo-bees.
Well, that could prove interesting. Let's see what our guests know. Thanks for that, Mark. Appreciate it. Cynthia or Mike, any knowledge of the robo-bee?
That's a new one for me. I haven't heard of that.
Right. Same here. I haven't heard of that one either, no. I have to look into that.
All right. Mike Kroon, what can you tell us about the CREP program? And please tell us it's not pronounced creep.
No, it's not. It's actually the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, and pronounced crep. It's actually a program that's made for landowners who have cropland or marginal pasture land. And what we're trying to do is reestablish buffers along basically fish streams, kind of streams that need a little more shade to kind of help out the endangered, those salmonids and fish species that are on the endangered species list. And what we try and do, is we try and get the landowners to go in and take out invasive weeds, such as scotch broom, blackberry, and so on, and plant some more of these native species that Cynthia was talking about, some of the flowering species. A few trees, shrubs, and so on, kind of reestablish those buffers in there. And it's a program that's available year-round. You just have to apply to the Farm Service Agency. And Oregon Department of Forestry is kind of a technical provider to the landowner to show them what kind of trees and shrubs and so on to plant.
And I see your title, Mike, is Incentives Coordinator. So what kinds of incentives come along with the CREP program?
With the CREP program, it's about a 10-year program. Install the buffers, and it's a 10-year, it's called a conservation easement, or it's an easement along the stream, and the Farm Service Agency comes in and pays you to keep that buffer there for 10 years. So each year you get paid so much for keeping that buffer, and I'm not sure exactly how much it is, but they pay you to keep it there to help provide the shade along the stream.
I imagine it's not negotiable. Is it just something that goes by buffer length or something?
By buffer width and length, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so it's just a measurement sort of thing. And what are some of the requirements to take part in CREP?
Other than it be cropland or marginal pasture land,
mm-hmm.
It's just basically you come in and you have to maintain that buffer. So once it's established, the Farm Service Agency or their representatives come in, their contractor comes in and establishes kind of the buffer for you. And it's up to the landowner to get with that payment that's made every year to use that to keep that buffer in place for the duration of the contract, which, like I said, is typically 10 years. And after that 10 years is over, you can decide whether or not to keep that buffer in place or continue on and do it for another 10 or 15 years.
I understand there is an emphasis on removal of the invasive species. So is there a periodic review just to make sure that those are being kept away?
Correct. I believe they will come in, and the first 2 or 3 years they'll actually come in and make sure that they're removed and kept out. And then periodically, I'm not sure how often, maybe once every 2 or 3 years, they'll come in and inspect to see if they're actually being kept out. Yes.
All right. So Cynthia Orlando, for those of us who don't own big chunks of land out in the boonies, if we're just dealing with urban or suburban yards, what are good resources where people can go to find the stuff that does encourage pollinators and is non-invasive, so we can get rid of one category and encourage the other?
Well, there's a couple of websites in addition to nurseries and native plant nurseries. There is the NABA website, and if I can get my acronym right, National Association, no, North American Butterfly Association. And that website has a wealth of information on it for folks interested in plants for butterflies, per se. And then the Native Plant Society of Oregon also has a great website with a lot of information that they could look there as well. And then Department of Forestry has a little bit of information on our in our news release section, and we'll probably add something eventually to our urban forestry section as well on native plants.
All right. We'll make sure we put up a link today on our Facebook page to the Native Plant Society of Oregon, certainly to make sure that we get that out there. I do find it interesting that in the material put out by forestry about Pollinators Week, there's a line here about resist the urge to have a totally manicured lawn and garden.
Yeah, that's a really good piece of advice. Sometimes people tend to look at nature as something that has to be like controlled, or I'm going to control every last little twig out in my yard. And it's actually better for pollinators and the ecosystem services that your yard provides in general to leave some areas a little bit undisturbed, and in the fall perhaps leave the leaves on the ground. Sometimes people cart off the leaves in the fall. I always encourage people to take those leaves and just use those as mulch and mulch them in place. So, that's just a good general rule of thumb. It helps butterflies, bees, all kinds of insects, birds find food, if you leave things a little bit less disturbed.
I noticed that that there was also the discussion of bare patches are helpful as well. I mean, and I know some people who really take good care of their lawns would be out there with the seeds or the sod or both and dealing with that. So what do the bare patches do?
I think that's more for a mud source. Butterflies use mud. I'm not exactly sure, again, not being a butterfly expert, mm-hmm. but I know that's another one of their habitat preferences. They like to have a little patch of mud.
Okay, so Pollinators Week, you can observe Pollinator Week, National Pollinator Week, by making good habitat for pollinators. And there are programs, as you heard, through the Oregon Department of Forestry to help this along if you do own some land out in the country. Cynthia Orlando and Mike Kroon have been our guests on the Jefferson Exchange. Thank you both for joining us to talk about pollinators.
Thank you, Jeff, very much for having us. And just was going to make one last little comment is some folks listening might not be interested in gardening, but some of the native plants are actually your low-maintenance plants. So for people that are looking for easier ways to maintain their yard or garden, you might want to ask about the low-maintenance ones.
That was worth underscoring for the people like me who are really good at growing weeds and very little else. All right. Thanks again.